This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Today in studio, we're very fortunate to have Julie Kurt, who is an attorney who has 20 years experience as a criminal law attorney, 8 years experience as a DUI prosecutor for the City Court of Atlanta, and 12 years experience in criminal defense. She currently works at the law firm of Jurgen, Barber, and Kent. Kurt, excuse me, Julie. It's a law firm that specializes in drug and alcohol-related offenses and law. And I am very excited to have you in studio today because I think a lot of our listeners have many questions about the legal system and the often very intense interface between addiction and the law. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I was hoping that you might be willing to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you came into this field of law.
Once I went to law school at the University of Florida, and when I graduated, I really never saw myself in the criminal law field at all. I joined a firm that did a couple different things and found myself handling one of the criminal law cases and ended up in a jury trial and found that I loved that. Naturally, as a criminal lawyer, I think if you want a lot of trial experiences, DUI cases are not only the most common offense in the state of criminal offense in the state of Georgia, but in every state. They're also one of the most litigated offenses. And so that was a natural fit for my interest in trial work and criminal law that was developing that I ended up specializing in DUI law.
I think that's awesome. And your comments around trial work, more and more we're seeing many cases going to arbitration. Our jury trial system here in the United States has had some bumps and bruises over the years, and I think our right to a trial by jury of our peers is one of the rights that often we take for granted. And fortunately, in your field, that's still very much a part of the work you do.
Yes, Georgia is one of the states where you are, even on your first offense DUI, entitled to a jury trial. It's a misdemeanor. You're entitled to a jury trial by six peers, and it's a deeply held right that all the judges in the state respect. I haven't seen that cut off in any way here in Georgia.
And I think that's really fortunate and one of the things that we should all be more aware of and all be more supportive of this very important right that is somewhat unique to our country and to our citizens. So thank you for the work that you do and thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
We're often faced with folks coming into treatment for addiction. They don't usually wake up one morning and say, gee, my life is going so well and I'm so happy with my circumstances that I think I'll go to rehab. Unfortunately, many of them are coming to us because of some serious consequences that have occurred in their life. Their boss has decided to fire them, their spouse has decided to leave them, their family's decided to disown them, but probably the single most common reason is that there has been some difficulty with the law. An arrest, a pending charge, a probation violation, some kind of complication, not always, but generally related to their disease of addiction that has been a big motivator for them to come. So what has been your experience in working with folks who have faced maybe for the first time some legal consequences?
You know, the first thing is, although, you know, your first offense DUI charge in Georgia is a misdemeanor, maybe a possession of marijuana charge in Georgia, a first offense, that's also a misdemeanor. And so to some degree, especially when people are in crisis, their concern for handling the legal side of it is not their first concern. And that's a bit of a mistake, because even though these are misdemeanor charges, they have very serious effects on people and their lives and on their criminal record. One thing that's a little bit unique in DUI than in any other kind of criminal offense is that after arrest, you only have 10 days to challenge an automatic suspension of your license based on either your results of a chemical sobriety test or your refusal to submit to a chemical sobriety test. It's something that people don't get very good notice of during the arrest. The information detailing this suspension is on the back of a form in light print that people don't always notice, and they're so overwhelmed with the process of bonding themselves out of jail, getting their car back, and anxiety that they don't carefully go through that paperwork and even discover this. And so early contact with a lawyer is really important just to keeping your license to drive while you go through the rest of this criminal process. Like I said, DUI is one of the I think it's actually the only offense where you have both a criminal proceeding and a civil proceeding starting out against you from the one incident. Even on a marijuana case where you don't have an impact on your license immediately, how you handle that case can make a big difference in what happens to your license. And again, this is sort of a separate proceeding. You can, if you think about a shoplifting case in comparison, if somebody were to be arrested for shoplifting, nothing's going to happen to them until the court date that's on the bottom of their charge. And when they get to the court, if they don't have a lawyer, the judge might say, well, this is your first shoplifting charge. I'm going to give you a fine of $500. This will be on your criminal history as a misdemeanor. That's what's going to happen to you. Do you want to take the plea? And you can make your decision based on that information.
Right.
It's very different on a drug case, because the judge might say, well, this is your first drug offense. I'm going to let you plea and give you a $400 fine. And a lot of people are like, that's great. I'll be done with it. What they don't tell you, because it's not their job to tell you, is what's going to happen to your license. So you think you're done with your marijuana case. You get home. 2 weeks later, you get a letter in the mail from the Department of Driver Services telling you that your license to drive has been suspended for 6 months. And at that point, you have few options for undoing that. It's very limited. It's expensive. It's difficult. And there's no guarantee that you'll be successful. Having a lawyer help you navigate those waters to begin with gives you a lot more options for an outcome that will let you keep your license, which will allow you to keep your job while you handle the other issues that go along with a drug and alcohol charge, such as addiction.
I think that is very important information, because if you think of how stressful it must be to be arrested for DUI, often inherent in the name is that you may or may not be under the influence of something that's going to impair your memory and your judgment and your impulse control, and to not realize that you need to read the small print, the back page, and that it's not innocent till proven guilty. Necessarily in this case, it's you need to make a statement with the court within 10 days to prevent your suspension of your license until you get to your jury trial or your pleading in front of the judge.
Absolutely. And because what happens to your license, that's one of the most severe penalties that happens. I mean, there's a range of penalties that happens. For instance, in a first offense DUI, there's fines, there's community service, there's DUI school, there's a drug and alcohol evaluation, there's a period of probation, there's a range of potential jail time, but it can go from quite small to 12 months in jail. But often for most people, commonly, the worst penalty is what happens to their license, and you might have missed your opportunity to get a good outcome on that if you haven't contacted legal counsel. And because, you're right, it's not innocent until proven guilty, because that license hearing is a civil hearing. So all that innocent until proven guilty only applies to criminal components.
Right.
Which is totally separate in this case from the civil component.
And not realizing that it is a two-prong system and a two-prong charge that that is much more complicated than, you know, taking your licks and say, sorry, I won't do that again. There's much more to this than that. And as with many things surrounding drugs and alcohol, these things happen and it's a crisis. It's not the kind of thing that, oh, I'm going to go buy a new car, and so I'm going to research and I'm going to look at the blue book and I'm going to go shop and test drive and all of these kinds of things. If you need an attorney, and you need one quickly, and if this happens on a Friday night, you may have some complications. So how might a person know how to find a good attorney, especially if they don't necessarily have a family friend or their daddy's an attorney or something?
They may not want to tell people they know.
Right. Then that's the other side of it that we often see, that young people getting arrested and they're figuring a way to get their bond and they're getting out of jail and they don't always let their family and loved ones know what's happened to them until it's way on down the road and too late for some of these interventions.
And I understand that impulse.
Right.
Especially if you don't have any experience with attorneys, you don't have any idea how much it might cost, you might even be afraid to even find out. And I'll say a couple of things on that. One, if it's a DUI arrest, in Georgia, most often you're going to get a lot of mail solicitations from a lot of attorneys.
Really?
Absolutely. Anywhere in Metro Atlanta, at least, I promise you, you will get 40, 60 pieces of mail from attorneys letting you know, hey, we're here to help. If you're interested, give us a call. Most of them will offer free consultations. I don't think for marijuana offenses you typically get that much mail letting you know who's out there to represent you. I do think it's a great, if you have somebody you can talk to, it's great to get a referral. Because it, even when you get all that mail, you don't know
right.
any of these people from any of these other people. And the worst lawyer can put together a very nice-looking brochure that isn't
right.
any guarantee of good representation. So my first advice is if you have a friend who's been through a similar experience, or if you have a family member, definitely see if you can seek a referral to a qualified, experienced attorney. If you don't feel comfortable doing that or you don't have that resource, God bless the internet. I mean, it's such a wealth of information. There are lawyer referral websites out there
mm-hmm.
that, you know, a quick Google search of your crime and the name of the court, Fulton County, Doraville, wherever the court is, will pop you up a list of attorneys. Most attorneys in criminal work offer free consultations. I think the most important thing to ask is, are you specialized in this area? You know, time to time, I will be taking a case over for a contracts lawyer.
Right.
A tax. Property lawyer.
Right.
Exactly. Who is doing it for one of their friend's kids, thinking that, oh, this is just a misdemeanor, and they've already done damage, because this is complicated, even for lawyers. So you want to find out, is this, you know, are drug and alcohol related offenses a specialty for them? Because it is a very technical
mm-hmm.
area. Just the code of law is technical. And then because it's often litigated, the case law is very fluid and moving. And so you need somebody who's keeping up mm-hmm. to both changes in the code and changes in the case law. Years of experience matter. And so you want to... you want to find out if this is somebody who's been specializing in this area for a period of time. And then you want to know if they have experience in the court you're going to. And I think that's important.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about how to find a good attorney and how to make good choices in a bad situation. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction. And today we're talking about making good choices in difficult situations involving the legal system, particularly around issues related to DUI and drug charges. And with us today in studio is Julie Kurt. She is a very experienced criminal defense lawyer as well as a prosecutor. And we will talk about that a little bit because I think that really lends not only to your credibility, but to your experience and your understanding both sides, which is really helpful when you're representing someone. If you're interested in learning more about Julie and her practice, you can check her out on the web at www.ybklaw.com. That's ybklaw.com, or you can call and request information at 404-994-2797, 404-994-2797, and have your paper and pencil ready because we will give these contact information to you again at our next break. So thank you for being here. And right before we were talking about some of the issues related to arrests, particularly around DUI, and some of the complications with that. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of your experience and what people need to be aware of in finding a good attorney? Because that's the thing that most people have no idea what to do about.
Well, one thing that's important to keep in mind when you're considering DUIs, for instance, on the first offense, probably one thing that everybody's worried about when they first come in to see me is, what about jail time? Am I going back to jail? How long am I going back to jail for? On a DUI, a first offense, the judge can sentence you to as low as 24 hours, all the way up to 12 months in jail for each charge you were given.
Wow.
So on an average DUI where you're arrested for DUI and failure to maintain lane, you could do 2 years in jail. I'm not telling you that's likely to happen, but the judge has that discretion. And because of that, what happens on your DUI case has a lot to do with which judge and which prosecutor is assigned to handle your case. And that's why I think it's important to find an attorney who's got experience in the court,
yes,
specifically that you're going to, because it makes a big difference. I'll go to any court that anybody wants to pay me to go to, but if it's a court that I have not been to before and I don't have experience in, I am quick to tell the client, that is not a place I commonly experience. If you feel that you need me as opposed to a local lawyer who may be able to give you more input than I can, I'll do what I can to get caught up to speed on local practices and preferences. And like I said, often I do get handled. I've got a case in Cordele, Georgia I'm handling right now. And I've gone to the part of Georgia that you have to drive through Tennessee to get in on another case. I can't even remember what that was called. But I think it's important for me that I disclose. I might not be your best person because I don't need the case out there that badly. Like I said, often the client feels like because either we have a history together that they just feel more comfortable dealing with me or whoever sent them to me that they just feel more comfortable. And I do what I can to get caught up on what to expect from the local judge because they can be wildly different. Just the range of sentencing options tells you they've got a lot of room to be different and be lawful. Another thing is often when you're starting off with a DUI or a misdemeanor marijuana charge, you're starting out in a city court with one judge and one prosecutor. Because you have a right to a jury trial and there aren't any city courts in Georgia any longer who can do jury trials, that means you have an option to go to another court, usually the county. In Metro Atlanta, it's usually the county court, the state court. For instance, if you start off in the city of Atlanta and you can't resolve your case there, you can demand a jury trial and go and try to work it out in Fulton County State Court. If you don't have an attorney who knows which of those two venues is better,
given your circumstances and your situation.
Exactly. Given your criminal history and the facts of your case, it might be better handled in city court, or it might be better handled in state court if you've got a particularly difficult city court situation to deal with. And if your attorney doesn't know, very often I'll have clients call me and say, here's the facts of my case. I went ahead and demanded a jury trial, and I just wince and wish for a time machine because it's something that could have been much more easily resolved on the city level. Vice versa, there and some, you know, especially for things like marijuana charges. Sometimes there's the option of a diversion program. Not every court has one. If you don't know that maybe the city court has one, but the county doesn't, and you've done a jury demand, you've wasted an opportunity for your client. So you need somebody who understands what the local options are, just what, and certain judges are open to certain arguments and less open to other arguments. And if you don't have an attorney who's been in front of that judge before to know, you're at a disadvantage. You risk having a worse outcome.
And I really think that it's important for our listeners to understand very clearly that the relationship that the attorney may have with the prosecuting attorney, with the judge, with other people in the system is really important because sometimes discussions offline can be very helpful. But if the attorney is not familiar with the situation or the county or the court or even that type of law, you may be getting a really good financial deal because they're a friend and they're going to do it for you for free or as a discount, but you may be putting yourself at a significant disadvantage on down the road, both with how you get sentenced, but also then the consequences of that.
Absolutely. I mean, I always say these days the best advantage to have gotten so old at this point is that when I go to court, it's rare I see a room full of strangers. And that's the one upside I can point to middle age.
Well, I appreciate your experience, and I wouldn't call you middle age, believe me, not from my standpoint. So you've been arrested. You've managed to get yourself out of jail. You've found a good attorney. What are some of the things, there are some new statutes here in Georgia that may change the way evidence is produced, may change what can be used in court. You mentioned in your email the Williams case. Maybe you could catch us up on some of these recent changes.
You know, one thing I think that people often hear is that when you're on the street and you're being investigated for DUI, you want to refuse to submit to the chemical test. I told you I don't really like to get into that because, for one thing, the advice usually comes too late.
Right.
Somebody's already been arrested.
Right.
For another thing, back when I was young and used to think I could tell people what to do, I learned it didn't matter that I could tell somebody you should never do that. And then on their second DUI, they'd go ahead and do
it
what they did the first time. So I don't ever necessarily think – I don't give blanket advice like that. For one thing, there's too many different variables that dictate whether you should or should not take the test, and you have to make that decision while you're out there on the road for yourself. But these days, for those people who have already been arrested for DUI and submitted to a chemical test, either a blood or a breath test, just a few weeks ago, the Georgia Supreme Court made a ruling on what's called the Georgia Implied Consent Law. For as long as I've been a lawyer in Georgia, and for longer before that, the state would seek to get a chemical test of your breath or blood in a manner that would, you know, the Fourth Amendment protects you against searches and seizures by the state.
Right.
But the way that the state has gotten around that is through what is called the Georgia Implied Consent Law. Anybody who's been arrested for DUI might remember, after the arrest, the officer would read to you from a card, Georgia law requires you to submit to a state-administered chemical test of your blood, breath, urine, or other bodily substances for purposes of determining if you're under the influence of drugs, alcohol, or other prohibited substances. If you refuse to submit to this testing, your license or privilege to drive will be suspended on the highways of this state for a minimum period of 1 year. If you submit to the testing and your alcohol concentration indicates an alcohol concentration of 0.08 grams or more, your license or privilege to drive may be suspended. There's more, and
I'm impressed that you did that all from memory, people who are not seeing this live.
And if I missed a word, forgive me, but that's pretty close. The officer would read this card, ask you to submit to a test, and your response would be deemed to be giving implied consent to the test. If you were paying attention, and during arrest, nobody ever is. But if you were paying attention, you might have noticed your choices between refusing and losing your license for a year or taking the test and having that used against you in a trial. Well, the court has recently said, well, that might be implied consent. That is not actual consent. And because that's not actual consent, they are now asking Georgia courts to go back and decide whether, even if the person was read the implied consent warning and consented, well, that's a little coercive. Did they give actual consent? This is going to open up a ton of litigation.
Wow.
I mean, this is an issue that had been somewhat settled for the 10 years quietly. And I think this has blown it open wider than it's been in my 20 years of practicing. This is going to reopen the issue of, because very often people who are being arrested for DUI are very intoxicated.
Right,
exactly. To the point of being blacked out. And historically, the law has said the officer can stand over your blacked out body and read that card. And if you don't snap to and say yes or no, that's a refusal. And if you gargle, you go, oh, okay, that's a submission. That's not going to work anymore. So in every single case now, one of the issues that the judges are going to need to decide is, did this person have the capacity to consent, even though we kind of presume they were intoxicated? That's one question, especially now that Georgia's gotten so much more diverse. For years, people who are not native English speakers, you don't get that read to you
in Spanish. Turkish,
they just read it in English. You either understand, you understand, or you don't. Comprende or no comprende, they go forward. The police departments are going to have to figure out a way to give meaningful information to these individuals about whether or not they want to submit to this test.
Wow, this gives us a lot to think about, and we're going to take a break now and breathe. And when we come back, we'll talk more about some of these changes and how it might impact your difficult decision in a difficult situation. Thanks for listening.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Tracy Pearson at Prissy Tomboy. Are you looking for a way to inspire your preteen to teen girl to get outside and play? Listen to the Prissy Tomboy Radio Show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on America's Web Radio.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction. We're having a very interesting and thought-provoking conversation today with Julie Kirk, who is a very experienced criminal defense attorney, has worked as both prosecutor and defense work, which gives a very balanced and useful perspective, I would think, for your clients. As promised, if you are interested in learning more about her practice, you can check out the web at www.ybklaw.com. That's ybklaw.com. Or you can call 404-994-2797. 404-994-2797. So thank you for being here again. Very interesting. Right before the break, we were talking about this Williams case that may change what is admissible and the implied consent statute, or I'm not sure how you would refer to that, but the implied consent that individuals, even intoxicated individuals, are able to refuse or give consent for urine, blood, or breathalyzer testing. Wow, that's going to be a big, big change.
It's going to be a big change. I think the most interesting thing about it is that had this argument been made when I started practicing law 20 years ago, one of the things the court looks at is, are there exigent, is the word the court uses, but if you might think of it, urgent reasons that would allow the officer to get a blood or breath test without a warrant. And in DUI cases, it was always presumed that the hassle of getting a warrant to get a blood or breath test was too much while a person's blood alcohol level was dropping. Well, like I said, I think timing's everything on this case, because a lot of the courts have decided they wanted to do forced blood draws. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Where even if a person refused to give their consent, the officer could then go seek a warrant. And it's possible in this day of technology because they can do video warrants and they don't have to go to the find a judge at 3 o'clock in the morning. They can just get on camera. There's judges on standby. They can get the warrant on camera. It's a process that does not add a lot of time. So had the court considered this 20 years ago, they would have just fallen back on, well, exigent circumstances say there isn't time for a warrant, so that gives them the ability to do this without a warrant and without actual consent. But today, all these little courts and big courts, I mean, Douglas County does a ton of these forced blood draws. Gwinnett County does a lot of these forced blood draws. Fulton County has set up the equipment, has done a number of these forced blood draws. They can't argue that at this point they've sort of shot themselves in the foot for their much easier test, which was the warrantless test they were doing under implied consent. Now their best basis for doing that is kind of gone when they've set up this easy warrant system.
And when you think about Gwinnett County, which is one of the most diverse counties in terms of ethnicity and cultural background and language of all the counties in Georgia, trying to make sure that that card is read in the person's native tongue, trying to make sure that it is understood, is very complicated. And yet waiting, the longer you wait, blood and breath show what's in your system right at this moment, and your body, your liver in particular, and your lungs are detoxifying even as we speak. And so your the threshold for DUI will go down the longer it takes. It's a very complicated kind of picture.
I mean, police departments need to, you know, I think some of the departments have, recognizing the diversity of their counties, have tried to get officers who speak representative languages. So hopefully that'll help them overcome some of these hurdles. But otherwise, they're going to have to start enlisting technology very quickly. Because this is happening now. This is going to affect cases made tonight, whether or not they are able to actually give these people enough information that they can give not implied consent, but actual consent to submit to this test.
I know, having worked at Gwinnett Medical Center, you know, in the emergency room, they have access to language lines.
Right.
But those are, and as helpful as they are, they're still quite cumbersome, and the technology is difficult, and if someone is sick or in pain or impaired, it can be very difficult to figure out what's actually being said, understood, and reported back to you. So this is going to be very tricky. And
it's going to be an interesting couple of years, because this is, you know, just this case being decided isn't the answer. There's going to be several hundred cases that have unique facts, circumstances that the court is going to have to address. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the next couple of years.
And when we add the potential availability of medical marijuana and the fact that marijuana stays in one system much longer, I know that the courts out in Colorado and in Washington State are having some difficulty now, because we do know that that substance does, in fact, impair your driving. Looking at Colorado, overall, their DUI rate has gone down, but the DUIs that they are reporting are related to marijuana use, driving under the influence of marijuana. And so how do you codify that in a way that means you were intoxicated at the time versus you were intoxicated 2 weeks ago?
You know, I guess one thing I will say, I'm not at all against medical marijuana or, you know, whatever the legislature wants to do with it. I was hoping we'd let Colorado figure out some things first before we brought it to Georgia, because,
yes.
And here's the thing, one thing I've known, Colorado isn't, I suspect, really getting more marijuana DUIs. They're learning they have more marijuana DUIs because it's legal. People are now admitting it.
Right.
I mean, that's one thing I always knew as a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
Officers, there's a great deal of study about how to detect a driver impaired by alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
It's much grayer and it's much murkier about whether or not an officer has the ability to accurately detect when somebody's impaired by marijuana. Usually, what most officers in the field have, if you don't have specialized training, is I smelled marijuana, and maybe I saw bloodshot, glossy eyes, and from there, it's what do you admit to give them to work with? But there is a battery of tests that's called a drug recognition expert.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of officers in Georgia are certified in that. It's the most difficult certification. Any officer who has gotten it has told me it's the most difficult. And even that, the science on whether or not that's accurate for determining whether or not somebody's impaired by marijuana, the science behind that's a little weak. And I believe Maryland, I think, is a state that has already said, y'all can't use that. We don't trust the science behind it. So although I have a lot of admiration for the officers I know who have gone through that training,
mm-hmm.
and I have a lot of respect for their experience and their common sense, I've not yet been sold on the science behind it. It's a little bit different if you're looking for a stimulant, somebody under
right.
the influence of a stimulant or a hallucinogen. Marijuana is a little bit unique
mm-hmm.
as a category of drug. And even when I was my most prosecutorial prosecutor, and that's all I did, and I had a certain reputation for hard-nosedness, I knew a marijuana DUI was going to be a tough case for me. I tried mm-hmm. them, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't win all of them. And that's because you don't have a lot to go on.
Right.
People don't look like drunks look. They
right.
don't necessarily have that complete loss of coordination that at a certain point alcohol will give you. They don't necessarily, and often they're very quiet and reserved.
Right. They're not going to be in your face, belligerent and accusatory. They're going to be pretty compliant with whatever.
And quiet and not right. necessarily so very uncoordinated. And like I said, and for most officers, they have no training other than
right.
what does marijuana smell like to help them detect whether or not somebody is driving under the influence of marijuana. So I suspect historically, and still to this minute in Georgia, a lot of those marijuana DUIs, when people are under the influence of marijuana, a lot of them go unarrested, undetected. It's the people who smoke in their car.
Right.
Who go in their car in the clothes that they wore while smoking to get arrested.
Right. Have the substance and the paraphernalia right there in the seat next to them.
But I suspect we're missing as many as we're catching.
Probably.
And Colorado's numbers are going up because people are being more forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. So that leads me to another question that I think some of our listeners might have. Can you be arrested for DUI because of prescription drugs?
And I see more of that in the last 5 years, last 10 years, than ever before. And I'm surprised how many people are unaware of this. How many people are like, oh, I wasn't drunk. It was my antidepressant, plus I was on a non-prescription antihistamine, and that just kind of had me groggy. And they tell the officer that. That's an admission,
right?
Is what that is. That's a confession.
Confession
might
right.
be the word that non-lawyers would think of. That is absolutely. There's several different ways right now in Georgia. There's commonly six and a bunch of ancillary ways that you can be charged with driving under the influence. You can be charged with driving under the influence of alcohol. You can be charged with driving under the influence of drugs. You can be charged with driving under the influence of alcohol and drugs. So if you say, "Oh, it's not the beer I had at dinner, but it's the
my Prozac
I took," well, guess what? That's driving under the influence of alcohol and drugs. You can be driving under the influence of illegal drugs, but not prescription drugs are absolutely a way that somebody can be charged with driving under the influence. I think probably 7, 8 to 10 years ago, I started seeing a string of Ambien cases.
Yes,
and just because you have a prescription, you cannot drive on Ambien.
Right.
You can't really drive well at all, and you cannot drive legally. Usually those Ambien cases, that people are found wrapped around a telephone pole.
Right. Or dead, yeah.
And I think most people know they shouldn't drive under the influence of Ambien, but there was, a string of well-publicized cases where
yes.
people were sleep driving.
And that is one of the problems with sleep medications like Ambien, is that people sleepwalk, sleep talk, sleep eat. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll return to this very interesting conversation. So please stay tuned.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Tracy Pearson with Prissy Tomboy. Listen to the Prissy Tomboy radio show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time as I interview special guests that will inspire adventure and fitness for females.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare and learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Julie Kurt has been our guest today, and I'm really grateful for some great wisdom and excellent advice and help for our listeners in terms of choosing a good attorney, understanding some of the issues related to arrests and talking about some of the recent changes in the laws here in Georgia and court rulings around those. But I'd like to just speak in our last segment here a little bit about what happens, what are the options for people in terms of not avoiding consequences for their behavior, because certainly one of the things that we learn in recovery is that we have to accept responsibility. But sometimes people make decisions that can result in such severe consequences that they will have that following them for a lifetime. So what happens if someone is coming to you and they have a DUI charge? What are the options for that person in terms of accepting some responsibility but avoiding serious consequences?
You know, one of the things I do when I meet with a client is I tell them, I investigate the facts of the night, but we also talk about what their history is.
Uh-huh.
And then I tell them, here's the range of penalties that you could be facing. Here are some of the likely penalties that you will be facing. Let's talk about what you're most concerned about. Because sometimes I can't make the whole case go away, but I can make it very manageable if you tell me, Julie, I can't lose my license. I'll lose my job if I lose my license. Whatever you do, can you work this out so that I keep my license? If you have that as a priority, I usually can get what you need if I can't get what you want. You know, some of my clients are like, Julie, I'm terrified of jail. That was the worst night of my life. If I have to go back, mm-hmm. you know, for even 4 hours, I think I'll kill myself before I go. And I have a lot of clients who say mm-hmm. that to me.
Right.
And again, all right, if that's your priority, here's your record, here's your judge. Let's start working on some things we can do so that we can negotiate mm-hmm. around that jail time. Interestingly enough, in Georgia, there's been some softening, which I didn't think I'd see in a lot of areas. For one thing, a lot of the city courts now have the ability to have diversion programs. Those aren't supposed to be eligible for DUIs. The DUIs are not supposed to be able to be diverted, but very commonly a first offense marijuana charge can be diverted. And what a diversion program is where you are diverted away from the court, away from the judge. You're taken away from having to go in front of the judge and admit guilt or even plead no contest or first offender, but you're allowed to enter into a program outside of the court. Typically involves some community service, perhaps a drug and alcohol evaluation. Every court's allowed to tailor what they're asking for. Often it's a series of awareness programs for a first offense marijuana charge. And if you're compliant with what the program is asking you to do, mm-hmm. and if you don't pick up any new offenses while you're in the program, pass your drug test. That's almost always a component.
Yes, I would think.
The charge is able to be dismissed, and that is huge for a first
yes.
offender. I mean, especially as a prosecutor, what I see in court all the time are old high school students, young college students who are jeopardizing their record because otherwise a conviction in Georgia stays on your record forever. Until you're, it's not 5 years, it's not 10 years, it's until you're 60. And the way I say to the kids all the time is, you know, if you let this go on your record, you know, 40-year-old you is going to want to come back and punch 20-year-old you right in the face because you've screwed everything up. Mm-hmm. If you're going to college, you lose your Hope Scholarship.
Or you might not be able to get in.
You might not even be able to get in. You're going to have to admit to every employer. And this is a deal breaker for lots of employment. You know, truck drivers, people who are going to be operating heavy equipment. You can see why their employers are going to be worried about possible substance abuse issues. You have to disclose it on apartment applications. And they're not going to be happy to see it because they don't want to invite possible criminal activity onto their premises. So this is a really great opportunity for some people. Another thing that has happened is that a lot of the courts have started accountability courts, and they range from what they will call DUI court, and these are courts that are typically a way for a multiple DUI offender to enroll in a court-monitored substance abuse program as a way of possibly avoiding lengthy jail time. Another big benefit.
And to get treatment.
Hopefully, yes.
Yes, yes.
And not everybody wants it, but often they're very incentivized
yes.
by the opportunity to avoid a long jail sentence. These programs aren't to be entered into lightly. They're serious programs. You enter into a serious contract, and they have serious demands on your time. But for some people, this is a way to get treatment, a way to avoid jail time. Another thing that it can impact most recently, and this I never thought I'd see, is historically on a second DUI within 5 years, you're facing a 12-month license suspension with no ability to get a work permit, no ability to reinstate early, and that's followed up by a 6-month period with an ignition interlock device attached to your car for a period of 18 months without a full driving privilege. Metro Atlanta does not have that kind of public transportation.
No.
That was a career ender for a lot of people, or put them in a really difficult decision of, do I keep my job or do I break the law? And started a very bad cycle of law enforcement involvement for a lot of people. And Governor Deal has seen fit to sort of guide a change in the law where for second in five offenders, if they enter into a DUI court or a drug court program, after 4 months, the judge has the ability to issue you a permit to drive with an ignition interlock device. And that is life-changing for a lot of people because that one-year suspension is a real hardship. I mean, and if you get outside of Metro Atlanta where there's nothing, not even bad bus service.
Right.
It's just critical. And so that's a real opportunity for people and a real carrot to hope that people will engage in these treatment programs. There's also drug court programs. And again, something that's never than the case before in Georgia, after successful completion of a drug court program, your drug charge can be dismissed and you can apply to have the arrest restricted from your record. So you don't have to admit it to anybody other than law enforcement. And again, historically, there's been no way to get a conviction off your record. And that's one way now through these drug court programs. You know, it's a carrot stick approach, but I think that's a really nice carrot to offer people and hopefully incentivize them to get involved in helping themselves in these treatment programs. They're not available everywhere, but every year more courts are adopting these programs. And the hope is that they reduce recidivism and give people an opportunity to work through this issue.
And treatment. I have to say, I think that looking at what attorneys, judges, and other folks in the legal field have done to get people into treatment, it has been much more effective. It has been much more, just in terms of numbers of people having access to treatment than anything the medical field has done. I really have to say that I'm very grateful, because many of our patients, this is a critical moment in their life. It is a teachable moment, if you will. Yes, the consequences can be severe, but it is an opportunity for them to enter into treatment, even unwilling. And we know the data is very clear that even unwilling treatment can be very successful treatment. And the rate of success that we see with these drug courts and with these other diversion programs is really commendable, and has offered the patients that we see a great opportunity to not only prevent significant problems with the rest of their life, but has really saved their lives. And so I appreciate the work that you do and your fellow attorneys and judges who are supporting this effort.
Well, I think it's great, and it seems so common sense to us, but yet you can, and I'll have clients who will walk in, older guys to this day, who will be on their 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th DUI, and when you ask them, has anybody ever ordered you to treatment? It's been on the books for at least 15 years now that on a second DUI there should be some course of treatment. And I'm always surprised, and yet I hear it so often, no, I've never done anything. I've never gone to see a counselor. The court's never asked me to. And it just seems so counterproductive and so costly to them and possibly other lives.
Right, and very dangerous, and a life that may have had a very different outcome. It really has been a big and positive move towards treatment, to recognize that people can make bad mistakes, but there are also people who truly have a disease, and they truly deserve an opportunity for treatment. And like I say, the legal field has done much more about making that happen than has the medical field. So we have some catching up to do. We're going to need to stop for today. And I do want to just thank you so much, Julie, for being here and for sharing your wisdom. For those of you interested in finding out more about her practice, please go to www.ybklaw.com or phone her at 404-994-2797. Again, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.